Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. Welcome to the Crime Talk Network. It is March 29th, 2024, and we have a great show for you. First, Mr. Pryor talks to the press and gets a gag order in the Chad Daybell case. Just when you thought no more excuses could be made in the Alec Murdaugh case, well, there's one more. The judge tells how she is going to run the trial in the Delphi homicide case, a scream homicide, and yes, wait for it, ladies and gentlemen, a Gypsy Rose update. A show of hands, who saw this news coming? I did. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it.
Hi, lawyer. Lawyer. Lawyer.
Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for joining us. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't done so already. Like the video if you do, leave me a comment below, and hit that little bell for notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Yes, we are back to a routine. We are going to try to get a video up every day since we had our little hiatus while I was in trial for 3.5 weeks. So it's good to be back in the saddle again. All right, first, a gag order. All right, so John Pryor, the attorney for Chad Daybell, spoke to the press last week, and he got a gag order in response to that. The court's order, let's just take it from the court's order. We don't need any other sources. Let's just go straight to the court's order. The court states in their order, counsel in this case have recently raised concerns about pervasive media coverage. Questionnaires have now been completed by prospective jurors who are admonished to avoid further media exposure to this case or investigation into this case. And the court is now advised and has confirmed that counsel for the defense participated in an interview with a reporter about this case, which interview has now been broadcast publicly. During this stage where unbiased jurors are being sought, in light of this and in the interest of impaneling an unbiased jury and to assist in insulating the attorneys from further media requests, pursuant to the Idaho Code Section 1-1603, the court hereby enters the following order. First, the attorneys for any interested party in this case or any attorney who has previously represented any party to this case, including the prosecuting attorney, defense attorney, and any attorney representing a witness, victim, or victim's family, are prohibited from making extrajudicial statements, written or oral, concerning this case between March 28th and April 15th, 2024, or until after opening statements have been presented with evidence underway, if that occurs before April 15th, 2024. This order specifically prohibits any statements which a reasonable person would expect to be disseminated by means of public communication that relate to the following order. One, evidence regarding the occurrence or transactions involved in the case, the character, credibility, reputation, or criminal record of the party, victim, or witness, or the identity of any witness or the expected testimony of a party, victim, or witness, and any opinion as to the merits of the case or the claims or defense of a party, or any information a lawyer knows or reasonably should know is likely to be inadmissible as evidence in a trial, and that would, if disclosed, create a substantial risk of prejudicing an impartial trial, or which could potentially taint or influence a prospective juror who has not yet been impaneled and sworn or advised to avoid media reporting on this case. Any information reasonably likely to interfere with a fair trial in this case afforded under the United States and Idaho Constitution, such as the existence or contents of any confessions, admissions, or statements given by the defendant, the possibility of a plea deal, or any opinion as to the defendant's guilt or innocence. It is further ordered that no individual covered by this order shall avoid its prescription by actions directly or indirectly, but deliberately, that result in violation of this order. Should improper media intrusions occur conflicting with the terms of this order, affected parties are to inform the court immediately, whereby the court may take further actions. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. I get it. You know, nobody's really talked to anybody in this case previously. And I was trying to think to myself, Was there a previous gag order in this case? I don't think so. But I think the judge told everybody, hey, you got to comply with the ethical rules, which is don't say anything that isn't admissible and it's going to taint the case. I get it. It is what it is. John Pryor, he does one interview. He gets in trouble. Now, he's the attorney for Chad Daybell. And, he, you know, what did he say in that little interview? Basically, yeah, you know, I'm doing it all myself. All those resources of the state over there against little old me. But he really didn't say anything that I thought was objectionable in any way. He said he didn't know and couldn't discuss who was going to be called. He was asked specifically whether Lori Vallow would be called as a witness. And he said, I can't really say. We could call her. We couldn't call her. Maybe the prosecution calls her. Maybe they don't. So nothing that anybody hasn't probably already thought or heard about. Now, let's face it. I doubt Lori Vallow is going to testify. She has her Fifth Amendment rights on appeal. She has a pending case. Any attorney worth their salt would advise anyone that intended to call her that unless she received some sort of immunity, that she would be asserting her Fifth Amendment rights and therefore not going to testify. So don't think it is a big deal, but the court thought that they should do it. I mean, here we are. The interview was last week. It came out last week. Trial begins Monday. At least jury selection does. I don't think I'd lose a whole lot of sleep over this one, ladies and gentlemen. But hey, that's the breaking news for today. Can't wait for the jury selection to start. And it sounds like the judge believes that the trial could take up to 10 weeks. Jury selection could take, well, at least according to his order, through the 15th. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. Anyway, if it's being brought to you, live from the courtroom, we will be bringing it to you as well. Next on the docket, just when you thought you couldn't have heard any more excuses, well, things get just a little more bizarre. That's right. So the attorneys for Alec Murdaugh said that the FBI agent that conducted the polygraph test that the FBI are now saying that he flunked asked odd questions and confided that he had just examined the notorious Dutch killer of the Alabama teen, throwing the results off. Now, the name check of Jordan Vandersloot in court papers appeared in court papers that throws a little more bizarreness into the Alec Murdaugh case. You know, obviously he's disbarred and he's serving multiple life sentences for the death of his wife and son, Maggie and Paul. Now, Murdaugh denies killing them while admitting he stole millions of dollars from his clients and his law firm before his drug addiction issues and what have you. Always been an issue, and I've always said it from the beginning, is where did that kind of money go to? He didn't spend it all on drugs. Somebody else was getting a piece of it. Anyway, his federal sentencing is coming up, and he had to cooperate with the federal authorities explaining where the money went. And they think they, the prosecutors for the United States Attorney's Office, believe that Murdaugh is being probably 80% truthful, but he's not providing enough information as it relates to another attorney that may have received a cut of the proceeds that he stole. So now we have an issue where, for sentencing, the government is saying deals off, he should get the maximum sentence of over 100 years. He shouldn't get any leniency because he lied. And obviously the defense is saying no, because we believe that he was in fact being truthful, or this Vandersloot thing truthfully messed him up, and therefore it skewed the results. Prosecution says, you lied, deals off. And that's kind of the way the plea agreements are usually written in federal court, is that you have to cooperate. And if they find that you did not provide useful testimony or truthful testimony to them, and they can prove that you lied, well, guess what? Deals off. Now, a polygraph test, you know, I put zero trust in a polygraph test. I have had clients that have told me they have done it and they can pass a polygraph test. I've had other people that I swear up and down, I thought they were innocent, that couldn't pass a polygraph test to save their life. So I'm not sure that's the best evidence you have to convince a federal judge that the deal should be off. Now, in the response that the attorneys for Alec Murdaugh filed, they state the documents from the state prosecutors in his murder case, who fought against having the defense use polygraph results, that said Murdoch's friend failed his own test when asked if he was involved in the killing of Murdoch's wife and son. See, polygraphs just aren't, they're not admissible. Anyway, the Murdoch results were made unreliable by the FBI examiner, who just before the exam asked Murdoch if he could keep a secret, then told him that he had just come from Alabama, where he had done the polygraph test on Vandersloot, who admitted to killing Natalie Holloway back in 2005, according to Murdoch's attorneys. Anyway, the examiner also told Murdoch he believed he didn't kill his wife and son, and asked him some confusing questions about hidden assets, according to Murdoch's attorneys. And they cite in their brief that say, hey, there are legitimate questions as to whether the government intentionally manipulated the results to make it so they could void the plea agreement and achieve the prosecutor's stated desire to ensure that he will never be a free man again. So Murdoch lawyers said they might have more objections to the polygraph, but they only learned about the prosecution's allegations this past Tuesday and hadn't had time to have their expert review the results. Guess what? They are asking the sentencing judge to ignore those results, which any defense attorney would, for sure, or ask for additional time so that you can have your expert take a look at it. Anyway, the motions filed by the prosecution in the case of Mr. Murdoch in federal court there in Charleston, South Carolina, did not answer the defense arguments. The matter will likely be taken up at the sentencing hearing on Monday. Now, the pre-sentence investigation report recommends a sentence of between 17 and a half years to 22 years in prison for Mr. Murdoch. Now, obviously, he's serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole, unless, of course, that gets reversed. Now, he did plead guilty to stealing money for his clients in state court, where he got a 27-year sentence by the state judge. And once again, the prosecutors in that case use that as an insurance policy in case the murder trial gets reversed, more than likely on some sort of 404B issues where the judge allowed in all the financial crime evidence. That'd be my guess. Anyway, now the federal case was supposed to have been even more insurance for the prosecutors. And obviously Murdoch agreed to the deal because he believed that it would run concurrent with his state sentence. Now the prosecutors want Mr. Murdoch to face the stiffest sentence possible because they believe he breached that plea agreement. And guess what? That would more than likely make that sentence run consecutive. So once he got done with his state cases, then he could go to the feds and start that sentence there. Anyway, he pled guilty to 22 counts, and they all carry a maximum of 20 years in prison. Some of them actually carry a maximum of 30 years. Now, the prosecutors want to keep secret four statements, including the polygraph that Murdoch made to the FBI. The police think that Murdoch is trying to protect an attorney who helped him steal the money, and they believe that there's more than $6 million in stolen money went to this drug habit is not true. And the prosecutors believe that any of these statements that Murdoch made in this proffer slash polygraph test could damage an ongoing investigation. Needless to say, Murdoch attorneys want the statements released, with agents redacting out the information that they don't want made available to the public, while leaving the bulk of the statements available so that the judge can assess the statements for themselves. Now, state prosecutors estimated that Murdoch stole about $12 million bucks from clients by diverting settlement money, as well as stealing money from his law firm. The investigators in South Carolina said that Murdoch's financial schemes were about to be exposed back in June of 2021, and that's why he decided to kill his wife and son to draw a little sympathy for himself, because all the money issues were coming about. So we know how that trial turned out. Lots of fight. This case is not over. It won't be over Monday in federal court. It will go on for years. And just to make clear, Mr. Murdoch still denies killing his wife and kids. Next, we're getting a whole lot more information as to how the trial will be run in the Richard Allen case. Guess what? They're going to bring in 600 potential jurors because, well, that's what they're going to need to find people that have not formed an opinion as to the case of Richard Allen. So Judge Francis C. Gull, the judge presiding over the case, has stated that she expects jury selection to take approximately 3 days when the trial for Richard Allen begins on May 13th. She said the jury would then be sworn in on the fourth day with opening statements beginning on day five. And that means that the jury could start hearing testimony on May 17th. So after jury selection, the actual trial phase of the proceedings will take place at the Carroll County Courthouse in Delphi. Now, Judge Gull confirmed Allen's trial will take place 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, assuming there are no religious objections from any of the jurors. She also said that the jury will hear testimony from roughly 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. And the Carroll County Courthouse closes at noon on Wednesday, but the judge plans to keep the trial going on Wednesday afternoon through the end of the day. Now, the judge has scheduled 3 weeks for the entire trial and expects it to be completed by May 31st. And so far, she has not approved any media requests for cameras in the courtroom. Now, the jury, including several alternates, will come from Allen County, and then the jurors will be transported the roughly 100 miles to the Delphi area for trial. They will be sequestered, ladies and gentlemen. How long has it been since we've had a sequestered jury? I really can't think of the last time. It is such a rare occurrence. So apparently arrangements have already been made for the jurors to be lodged at a hotel close to Delphi. Their meals and activities will be also provided and paid for by the court system. Yes, and wait for it. Jurors will receive $80 per day for the first 5 days of the trial. After that, $90 per day for their services. Those rates are set by the state. Now, it's also been confirmed that the Allen County clerk has sent jury questionnaires to 600 Allen County residents for the Delphi murder, and the jury will obviously be chosen from those 600 people because it is a very high-profile case, not only in Indiana, but across the country, if not the world. And for those who maybe aren't familiar with it, maybe watching us for the first time and not familiar with this case, Richard Allen is charged with the murder of Abby Williams and Libby German. The teenagers were found murdered near the Monon High Bridge in Delphi in February of 2017. Allen and his attorneys have maintained his innocence and say that he was not involved in the killings. I think it's going to be an interesting case because the judge hates the defense attorney. I think one could actually say that the judge is actively participating in trying to foil the defense for Mr. Richard Allen. Prosecutors hate the attorneys as well as they continue to pursue these whole contempt proceedings about items that were photographed and seen of the crime scene and blah, blah, blah. You get the drift. It's going to be interesting. Please, Judge Francis C. Gull. Okay? Please. Here at Crime Talk, we're begging you. Let us see the trial. If the evidence is there and everyone's going to say, yep, the man is guilty, let it be, okay? I think we've found over time when people get to see the entire evidence in a case, people are satisfied with the jury's results. It's when we don't get to see it that there are issues as to questions as to the fairness of the proceedings. Televise it. Let us watch it. Next, screen killings? That's right. Is this weird and creepy or what? A Pennsylvania man has been arrested on a homicide charge after he burst into his neighbor's home and then slaughtered them with a chainsaw in a full Scream movie costume. Yes, you know, the little white face thing. Yeah, that. Now, believing that the victims had killed women and children a year ago is what the police are saying. So Zach Moyer, the defendant, given the presumption of innocence, apparently dressed in an terrifying all-black costume consistent with the Scream movie character Ghostface, allegedly struck his next-door neighbor, elderly man Edward Whitehead Jr., who was 59, multiple times with a knife and a battery-operated chainsaw, according to police. Now, the affidavit for arrest Warrant also reveals that Moyer admitted to stabbing Whitehead in the head before going back to his own home to watch a movie until the police arrived. I wonder if it was Scream that he was watching. Now, according to the criminal complaint, Moyer admitted to hiding the chainsaw he used in the attic and hiding the knife in a drawer. Now, police were called to the scene in the small town of Layton, Pennsylvania, about 3:30 p.m. on Monday. Now, the emergency personnel responded, rushed the Mr. Whitehead to the hospital, having suffered cuts to his right arm and the right side of his head above his eyebrow. He had wounds on his hands that were consistent with defensive wounds, according to police. And guess what? Had a large bleeding wound to the right side of his head, according to the complaint. Now, after getting the description of the man who attacked Whitehead, they rushed back to the crime scene, and they surrounded the house. Now, the troopers that arrived said that the state police officers were able to get Moyer out peacefully, telling the media there was communications going on between him and the state troopers, and he eventually did decide to open the door and come out on his own. One neighbor has told some local media there that Mr. Moyer placed a note on his window intended for the police that read, "Ed murdered women and kids. Eddie Jr. murdered women and kids last summer." We're going to be following this one, ladies and gentlemen. I saw the story when it came out the other day. I was hoping we'd get a little more information, but that's what we have. We're going to follow up on that as well. All right, next on the docket. Who would have believed it? That's right. Go ahead and raise your hand. I know. For those playing along at home, that's right. We called it. The marriage between Gypsy Rose Blanchard and her husband, Ryan Anderson, appears to be coming to an end. They have separated. Now, Miss Blanchard posted on her Facebook page that the couple has split 3 months after her release from the Missouri Correctional Center. Her Facebook post states, "People have been asking what is going on in my life. Unfortunately, my husband and I are going through a separation, and I moved in with my parents' home down the bayou," she wrote on her Facebook page. "I have the support of my family and friends to help guide me through this. I am learning to listen to my heart. Right now, I need to let myself find out who I am." As you know, she was released December 28th after serving time for her second-degree murder conviction of her mother. And according to the Missouri, Miss Blanchard qualified for her early release, 85% of her sentence, because, like I said, she was convicted back in 2015 for the death of her mother, Dee Dee Blanchard, who was found dead in their Springfield home. That's right, she'd been stabbed 17 times, not by Miss Blanchard, but her boyfriend that she was able to get. Anyway, Miss Blanchard had previously stated that she married the 37-year-old Anderson, a special education teacher, after learning that he was from Louisiana, her home state. And they just had a connection, a true friendship that ultimately turned into love and ultimately turned into marriage. The then happy couple married back in July of 2022, like I said, at the correctional center, but now it appears to be over. Now, I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. Okay, I don't like saying that. But in this particular case, I did. People were so like, "Oh my God, her story is so sad. The trauma that she endured. Oh my God, we're so happy for her." She conspired to kill her mom. Okay, I get it. There was some abuse, real weird stuff, but she could have gone to the police, could have gone to anybody else to say, "Help me, help me, help me." She didn't. And I know, I just heard it all the trauma. You don't understand the trauma, the chains that are there because of that. And then she started going out to all these little functions, and I'm like, oh, she's loving the attention. I wonder how long this is going to last when your special ed teacher husband wants to say, "You know, I think I just want to stay home tonight." She loves the limelight. She loves it. I'm sure her husband, Mr. Anderson, does not, and he just wants to get on with their life, their marriage. So obviously it's sad anytime somebody gets divorced, but maybe it's just life experience. Didn't see this one lasting too long. And frankly, not long at all since she got released. And who is it that says all these weird jailhouse marriage things, they just don't work out? Okay. It's one thing to talk to somebody. It's another thing to actually have to live with them. Just saying. All right. I know. Let the hate begin. I get it. I just never saw why there was so much sympathy for Ms. Blanchard, Gypsy Rose Blanchard. So anyway, we'll see where she goes from here. My guess is she loves the limelight. She's going to want to be in it no matter what. And finally, our dumb criminal of the day, a Florida woman is serving a prison sentence for a recent naked rampage at a convenience store, which included her pleasuring herself. And it was conducted in front of the police when she was arrested. That's right. Do you recall Celia Barrett? We talked about her earlier last year. Anyway, she pled guilty this month to a variety of charges stemming from her unclosed antics at the racetrack convenience store late January. And Ms. Barrett has been sentenced to 15 months in prison for the aggravated assault, obviously a felony, and four misdemeanors, including exposure of her sexual organs and disorderly intoxication. Now, following her sentence, she was transferred to the Pinellas County Jail to the custody of the Florida Department of Corrections. And apparently, alleged by the police, a drunken Ms. Barrett threatened workers at the racetrack back in St. Petersburg with a sharp-edged vegetable peeler. Where does it end, ladies and gentlemen? Where does it end? We start letting people have vegetable peelers out there, who knows what they're going to do? Or maybe vegetable peelers intimidate people. People don't intimidate people. It's the vegetable peelers. Anyway, the defendant admitted to, after being taken into custody, that she had been pleasuring herself in front of the deputies while still inside the store. It also should be noted that Barrett was previously serving time for battery and possession of marijuana, and paid her fines and court costs totaling some $1,100. So, Ms. Barrett, we hope that you can get yourself better, get yourself in a good place, and when you come out, no vegetable peelers, okay? No vegetable peelers. Stop the madness. Stop the violence, ladies and gentlemen. All right, that's all we have for you today. Have a wonderful weekend. We shall see you next week. Thanks for watching. And remember, the United States Constitution does matter.